KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Susie Orman is a best-selling author and TV celebrity. She's equal parts motivational speaker, financial guru, and now women's cheerleader. She hosts a regular television program on CNBC, just penned a new book called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny, a book that's currently number two on the New York Times Advice Books bestseller list. And yes, she hosts all those pledge specials on public television. Susie Orman and the world of women and money, next on Forum, after this. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Susie Orman says she never planned on writing a book about women and money. After all, the world has changed in recent years. More women work, more women make a lot of money. Why should there be a special book advising women on how to deal with money? And yet the more she talked to other women, including her own friends, the more she realized, she says, that all was not right in the relationship between women and money. In fact, Susie Orman argues, that's the problem. Women don't have a relationship with money, or when they do, it's dysfunctional. And so she sat down to write her eighth book. It's called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. Susie Orman is more than a best-selling author. She's everywhere. She hosts a regular television program on CNBC, pens columns for Oprah Winfrey's magazine, O, and hosts TV specials for public television. Her previous best-selling books include The Nine Steps to Financial Freedom, The Road to Wealth, and The Money Book for the Young, Fabulous, and Broke. And Susie Orman joins us now. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Pleasure to have you here. You talk a lot in your book about one of the characteristics that you think women sometimes have is that they don't put their own needs first. And one of the stories that you like to tell about that, in fact, you use this in your television program as well, is the story of the oxygen mask. Mm-hmm. Tell that story.
Well, it's true. You know, before I tell you that story, I just want you to think about this, because then when I tell the story, it will apply even more. And a woman's body has the ability to give birth. We not only have the ability to give birth, we have the ability to feed that which we have given birth to. So it is our nature to nurture. It is our nature to give to others before we really will give to ourselves. Now we go to an airplane. We get on an airplane and we are sitting there. And before we take off, every single time, you will hear the following statement being made by the flight attendant. When the oxygen mask falls down, you should take that oxygen mask and put it on your face first before your child's face if you happen to be traveling with children. Who are they talking to? They're talking to you, ladies, because it is your nature to give. You have to be reminded to take that oxygen mask and put it on your child's face first rather than yours. With a man, he would automatically put it on his face first, and that is not a put-down of men. That is how it should be. That is a good instinct, because if something happens to you, what does your kid do? Who's going to take care of your child? Who's going to support that child? So women need to learn that they simply need to give to themselves as much as they give of themselves. And on some level, that goes against our nature.
And is that particularly true with money, that women are inclined to want to first worry about the financial needs of their children, their sister, their parents, a lot of other people before they worry about their own?
Yeah, you know, I speak to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people a year. During my talks, when I speak, I always go to question and answers. One of the first questions a woman will always ask me is this: Susie, how is the best way, or what is the best way, to fund my child's college education? I then will ask back to that woman, do you have credit card debt? Well, of course, Susie. Do you have 8 months of an emergency fund saved up? No, Susie. Do you have any money put in retirement for yourself? Well, very little. I only put the minimum in my 401k. What are they thinking? What are they thinking? They are asking me about their children. I have never, and I mean never, had a man ask me that question ever. They will ask me about the stock market. They will ask me about the real estate market. They will ask me certain things that have to do with what they need to do with their money to make themselves strong so they can take care of their family. Again, that's a good thing. But a woman will always ask about her children before herself.
And is your fundamental argument, at least in part, that indeed the best thing that mother can do for her children is to take care of herself first?
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. And that is why I use that analogy of the oxygen mask. When you don't have the money to pay your bills, when you don't have the money in case of an emergency to fund something, you feel like you are suffocating. You feel like you can't breathe. A part of you is dying. And you think your children can't feel that? You think your children don't look at you and know when something's wrong? They might not know what is wrong. And children are so perceptive that they know something is wrong, but they don't understand money yet. I'm talking about young ones. And they think they did something wrong to upset mommy. So if you really want to take care of your children, you need to put the financial oxygen mask on yourself first.
You write in your book very directly, women don't want to take responsibility when it comes to money. You're very blunt about this. And you also say women shouldn't blame men for this problem.
Yeah. You know, Dave, when I was doing this book, and as you look at this book, obviously the title is Women and Money. I never, ever wanted this to be a book of women versus men. I never actually even wanted to write a book called Women and Money, because it was my distinct belief, and it still is to this day, that how a man would buy a good stock is the exact same way as how a woman would buy a stock. Men and women are equally intelligent and capable to purchase stocks, to invest their money. The difference is between men and women, however, is that men do not have a problem asking for a job promotion, a pay raise, or putting themselves first. Women think that the money that they make is for everybody else before themselves. It is their natural inclination. So I always wanted to bring men and women together. Too many times now, relationships break up because of arguments over money. So I actually wanted to talk to men and women as if they were one. My hope was and is for this book is that men will read it as well, so that they understand the emotional battles women have with wanting to give to themselves, the guilt they feel about giving to themselves, and to understand that it's not just that women don't want to do it, it's almost as if they can't do it because of our socialization process over the past history of time, since time began with money and women.
Well, let's talk then about how women can have, as you put it, a healthier relationship with money, because part of your argument is that you have to have a relationship, and women are relationships matter to women, so have a relationship with your money. What's some of the key steps to doing that? Is it, first of all, to make yourself more a priority? You talk about how women too often think of themselves as being on sale, on the sale rack, that they need to start by having a greater sense of value for themselves?
Yes, see, here's what I really believe will turn women around. Sure, I can write this book and I can tell you ladies, don't do this, do this, do this, don't do that. But that's not how we relate to things. I also obviously am a woman. Women, when they really understand, and ladies, when you really get that by helping yourself, you are actually helping your children, helping your spouse or life partner, helping your parents. When you finally get that, when you have the strength within you to pick yourself up as well as everybody else, then you will want to do that. So in the book, I hopefully make the case of why helping yourself helps others, why that then becomes a healthy relationship, and then things start to fall in place from there.
Susie Orman, our guest this hour, her new book is called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. It did strike me in reading your book and also watching your television program that you're really an evangelist about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, this book is as much about sort of cheerleading for women, a plea, really, and an argument and a cheerleading for women to take charge of their own lives as it is to here's what you do with this financial maneuver or that.
Yeah, I've always said that who you are determines what you have. So many times books just talk about money, 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 money. But how does money do anything? Money in itself is just an entity that if it can't do anything without you. Money flows through people. You're the ones who go out and earn it. You're the ones who get a paycheck and have to invest it, save it, or waste it. So if you don't have an understanding of who you are, money just will stay a meaningless commodity to yourself and the world as well. So for me to really get you to understand the role money needs to play in your life, I have to be an evangelist, so to speak, to get you to want to value yourself as much as you should. So I've always talked about self-worth and net worth being the key.
Well, let's talk then about self-worth as it relates to some very practical things that you want women to consider doing, starting with asking for a raise.
Yeah. Listen, here is the bottom line. When you undervalue who you are, the world will undervalue what you do. And when you undervalue what you do, the world will undervalue who you are. You work and you work and you work. And this is all in the chapter, You Are Not on Sale. But ladies, in my opinion, you do treat yourself like a commodity. You do. You will give to others. You will work your little booty off. Do whatever you can to make sure your employer, your employees are fine. But God forbid you have the courage to go in and ask for a pay raise or what you're really worth. You are afraid you will hurt your boss's feelings. God forbid if you are self-employed. You will raise your prices to your clients, even though you know that you are the best there is, but you don't have the money to meet your bill. So rather than asking for $5 more if you're a manicurist, you will simply work another 5 hours a day in order to meet those bills. I'm not asking you to go in and ask for a raise. In this book, I'm actually asking you to go in and demand what you are worth, to have it charted out very carefully, what you have done for the company that you work for, why you have made a contribution to them, and to not be afraid to go in there. And rather than say, can I please have a raise? And then your boss may say yes or no. But to go in there and say, here's what I have done, and now I'm asking you for either a 5 or 10% raise, one or the other.
So it's important to do your homework in that case, to do your research, and then to present that with confidence and authority because you've done your homework.
Which is where the 8 qualities of a wealthy woman come in that are presented in the books. The qualities that are harmony, where what you think, say, do, and feel are one. Balance, which is everything you do is based with an equilibrium, an equanimity about you, but you can't have balance in your life if you're out of harmony. Courage to say that which you are thinking and feeling. If you read the 8 qualities, or if you maybe have watched on my PBS show, when those qualities come to life within you, you then have what it takes to walk into any office and ask for what you deserve.
It is, because when I read that portion of your book about those qualities, you know, I would have thought, I guess, my preconception would have been that the 8 qualities you need are a certain level of financial smarts or, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And they're not about that at all. They're about, you say that it's important to sort of be in balance, that, as you say, or to speak with some courage. You talk about neatness being important.
Cleanliness.
Why is all of that so key?
It's key because, again, who you are ultimately determines what you have and get to keep financially speaking.
So if your records are a mess, that's
your records are a mess, so here you are. You can't find your bills. Your records are a mess, so you can't find your property tax bill. You can't find your monthly statements for your credit cards. You're late on your credit card payments. You're late on your student loans. You're late on your property taxes. You're late on your insurance bills. You pay the wrong amount. That all affects something known as your FICO score, which I talk about in month 2 of this book of the Save Yourself Plan. FICO score goes down, the 3-digit number that every one of you has.
Your credit score.
Credit score. Interest rates go up. Interest rates go up, everything can start to affect everything. So you have to be clean. You know, in the book I talk about in India, and a lot of my work is based in other traditions because, you know, I traveled a lot, Dave, to countries where people had no money. And it was, what do people who have no money, if they can find a little gleam in their eye of a smile, if they know what life is about with no money, could you imagine if we took those qualities and applied it here in the United States where you can have money? So you can have money and yourself. Oh, my God. That's the key to happiness, I think. So in India, there is a goddess of material and spiritual abundance by the name of Lakshmi. And every day you will see in India, women in particular, sweeping the doorstep of their homes clean to invite that goddess in, because money cannot dwell in filth. It can't. If your car looks like a garbage can, I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, you are a person who has credit card debt. If your closets look like a flea market where everything is on the floor, where you have so many items, you can't find anything. If you can't respect what money can buy, if you can't respect what money can buy, you can't respect money, period.
Do you think that there's a part of this is that people feel, women in particular, that, oh, I really shouldn't value money, as opposed to thinking, or do you want people to think instead, think about what matters in your life and about the way in which money is crucial to achieving those things?
I think women know the value of money. I think women get that a lot. I think women, however, are afraid to spend that value on themselves. Mm. I'm afraid women don't understand how valuable they really are in this equation. I think women think everybody else gives them their value. Ladies, I'm here to tell you with this book and everything that I do in life, you are the key to this world. Women, the world now is resting on our shoulders more than anybody else. You know, there's a saying in China that women hold up half the sky. I have to say, I've adapted that saying in the United States to women hold up the entire sky. We need to hold it up with strength and money now for ourselves as well as everybody else.
Suzy Orman, our guest this hour, her new book is called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. Let's talk through a couple of practical matters, because you do also give very concrete and specific advice about any number of things. You mentioned at the beginning of our hour this morning the person who wants to, who asks you about how to fund their child's college education when they still have credit card debt. So let's see if we can just walk through a handful of those sorts of questions. Why is credit card debt so bad? Why is that one of the things you first say people need to take care of?
Well, it's not so bad if it came for various reasons, but if credit card debt has been accumulating in your life not because of medical reasons or things like that, because, you know, I understand sometimes today in a world that we live with no health insurance and the things that we have going on where the middle class is actually disappearing, what a travesty that is. I get in some cases that credit card debt is a necessity. But for most people, credit card debt is where you are paying for your present day desires, but your costs will be your future day needs. How do you ever have financial freedom if you have credit card debt? Because debt is bondage. So one has to look at the type of credit card debt they have and the interest rate they are paying on that debt. The average person today, family in the United States of America, has $9,000 of credit card debt with an average interest rate of 17.49%. How do you make money on your money when you're paying 17.49% in credit card debt? Don't you think you would be far better off paying down your credit card debt and guaranteeing yourself an almost 18% return on your money than investing somewhere else where maybe if you get 8% on an annualized average rate of return?
So silly to have a savings account where you have, let's say, $10,000 and you have $5,000 in credit card debt that you need to knock off one, even if that means reducing your savings account?
Absolutely, if and only if the interest rate on the credit card debt that you're currently paying or the lowest amount you can get that interest rate lowered to is, let's just say, 15 or 16. If that interest rate is above what you are paying, so the interest rate on your credit card after you've done everything to get it lowered is above what you are getting on money in a savings account, what are you, nuts? Interest on a credit card isn't tax deductible. Interest on a savings account is taxable. So even if you're getting 5% taxable right now, after taxes, paying California state income tax, maybe you're getting 3% and you're paying 10%, 6%, whatever, on a credit card, doesn't make sense.
You also talk about, along with the dangers of credit card debt, that you worry about people using equity in their house. Does it make any sense to pull equity? A lot of people now use their houses as a kind of big credit card.
Could not be a bigger mistake if you try, especially if you are pulling out equity out of your home to pay off credit card debt. A lot of you will say, but Susie, I'm paying 18% on my credit card debt. I can't get that interest rate lowered. I'm pulling out equity. I'm going from a non-tax deductible debt, my credit card, to a tax deductible one, Miss Orman. Isn't that make a lot of sense, especially if it, let's say it's at 6%? Makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Your house is where you live. The equity line of credit that you are taking out is secured buy your home. If something happens to you and you cannot afford to pay back that equity line of credit, you get sick, you get laid off, something happens, there goes the house that you're living in. Credit card is unsecured debt. If you cannot pay off credit card debt, what are they going to do?
And keeping your house sacrosanct is particularly important for women?
I think it's the most important thing, especially for women and men, believe it or not. But for some reason, for women, nothing makes them feel more secure in life, especially later on in life, than having a house that they own outright. There is something about that. You know, there is this syndrome that goes on in women that doesn't happen in men that I'm sure you've heard about, called the bag lady syndrome. Women have this innate fear that one day they will end up powerless and penniless and on the streets. As this bag lady, you can see the image with her bags and shuffling around. I've never heard of a bag man syndrome, have you? Because it doesn't exist. So for women, when they own their house outright, it gives them a sense of power. When they're powerful, they make more money. So the key to being a woman who owns the power to control your destiny, ladies, is to make moves that are powerful for you. Because when you're powerful, you have the ability to create more, be more, and therefore have more.
We have to take a break in just a couple of minutes, but I want to touch on before the break the question of relationships as it relates to money, because you spend quite a bit of time in your book talking about how money is an important kind of barometer in a relationship. And you talk about, for example, that if you're dating someone, you really ought to know what their credit score is, that full disclosure of each person's financial status is really important if that relationship is going to work.
One out of two people who get married today, great, they're married, but those one out of two end up in divorce. Number one reason for divorce is arguments over money. You may know the personal personal hygiene habits, intimate habits of the person you're married, going to marry, bar none. What do you really know about their personal, financial, intimate details? Probably nothing. God forbid we should approach that subject. It just isn't what people do. There is that three score, that three indicator, those three numeric indicators known as your FICO scores, credit scores, that not only determine, obviously, how well you are in terms of a credit risk, but it also determines how responsible, obviously, have you been with your money. Because I'm here to tell you, if you're about to get involved with somebody who isn't responsible with their own money, when you marry them, they're not going to be responsible with yours either. So you better check their FICO scores.
So check their closet, check their car.
Check their car.
And check their credit card
rating.
Yes,
and their FICO scores. Remember, you want a FICO score that is at least, if I was going to be in a relationship with somebody, I would want that person to have a FICO score of 760 or above, honest to God, or I would think twice.
Is that a first date question?
That is a sec. As soon as you really think that you're going to be serious about this person, the two of you should have a really fun time. If I can be so bold on NBA, I know this isn't quite the way we speak here, but I would absolutely FICO first, then sex. Absolutely.
Susie Orman, our guest. The book is called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we will take your calls as well as part of our conversation. Here's how you can do that. If you have a question about your relationship, your credit score, money in general, you're welcome to call us now. Here's the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us your questions at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Back with more with Susie Orman and the world of women and money when we return. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our guest this hour, Susie Orman. Her new book is called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. We welcome your calls as part of our conversation, emails as well. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Lots of people lining up who want to get in and pose a question, and so let's get right to them. Kathy joins us first from Sacramento. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. I'm finally at a point in my life where kids are older and I'm almost an empty nester, happily married. But sometimes I feel like I'm very guilty about the amount of money I'm making. And why we're not saving more, and I look at all the unfortunate people around me struggling. It's primarily a women's issue.
Yeah, you know, Kathy, it's funny because did you hear the word that you used? You said you feel guilty. Guilty. That is an attribute, an emotion that women do feel. Again, please, men, I'm not putting you down for this, but men would not feel guilty if they were making a lot of money. In fact, men feel ashamed if they don't make more money, if they aren't making as much money as their male friends are making. They even feel a little bit ashamed if their wife is making more money than they are, whether they will admit it or not, it is there. So this is why I am tackling this issue now, women and money, because it doesn't make sense that you should feel guilty. You making less money doesn't help the world. You making, you know, do you see what I mean? You having less doesn't give more for others. What you need to understand, the more you have, the more you become secure with who you are and what you do with your money to help yourself, the more strength you have to really help this world. It's really false compassion, Kathy, if you think about it.
And Kathy, were you also, though, commenting or wondering about how to save more? Because it sounds like you're saying, I'm making a lot, I feel kind of guilty about that, but I'm also not saving. Is that right?
Sure. Seems like the day-to-day expenses, just keeping up a home, we have no outside help. We pretty much do everything ourselves, yard work, homework. Of course, we do have three kids in various levels of college.
And how much of your money are you spending on your children in college?
Oh, quite a bit of it.
Bingo. Here is the bottom line. You may not have, and you, as I started this program, you know, today, do you have 8 months of an emergency fund for yourself?
No.
Thank you. Do you have credit card debt?
Not really,
but some.
Under $2,000.
All right, but that is still credit card debt. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do you own your home outright?
Still making payments.
And if something were to happen to you and your husband today, you're out in the car, you're in a car crash. I am not being a pessimist here. I'm just being a realist. I get emails like this every day. And you weren't able to make any more money. Would you be able to keep the house, keep everything that you've got going for yourself, my love?
Probably not.
All right. But you are taking your money. You are taking your money to make sure that your children are okay in college. I rather see you have the children take out loans. There are always loans for kids to go to college. There are no loans to take care of you in case of an emergency. That is what this book and this whole thing that I'm doing is all about, Kathy. It's not the way it should be.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Appreciate
hey,
your...
Thank you.
You're participating.
Bye.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Let's go next to DJ, who joins us next in Fremont. DJ, go ahead.
Hi, Susie. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a big fan.
Thank you, DJ.
I am an independent consultant, and I'm doing pretty well for myself. I just, the struggle I have is so many things that you mentioned, I was thinking you were talking about me.
Yeah.
I have zero knowledge about money. I don't know how to manage it. And so wanted to know what's the first step to budgeting for every month. Because I would like to, I'm pretty much a checklist type of a person. If I know I can only spend so much in that month, that's what I'll do. But
all right, let me ask you this, though. You said that you're an independent consultant, so you actually set your own wages as to what you charge. Is that correct?
Yes.
And do you feel like you deserve to be paid more right now than you are actually charging for your services?
Actually, I just raised my my hourly rate, so I think.
But
I'm
you
okay.
did. But did you raise your hourly rate as much as you wished you had raised your hourly rate?
No.
Thank you. Listen to me. It's not just about how you budget to do what you do with the money that you get. It's about what you ask for in terms of what you are worth. This book, and again, I know you may feel that this is a plug for the book, but honest to God, you don't have to buy the book. You can go to the library and take it out and read it there. The book is a journey, in my opinion, from the beginning to the end of how you take yourself off the sale rack, how you do things so that you can truly value who you are. But the center part of this book is what is called the Save Yourself Plan. I'm just asking you to give me one day a month for five consecutive months, and I will tell you everything that you need to do. And that is in the book as well. So I ask you to venture into it, and you will see that I guide you. I hold your hand, so to speak, so that you do become a woman who owns the power to control her destiny.
DJ, thanks. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go next to Loretta, who joins us in Napa. Loretta, go ahead.
Hi, Susie. I don't have any debt, but I'm a food server in my 40s, and the only debt I actually have is my house. And I was wondering, how do I start putting money away to save my retirement?
So is this a home that you're going to be staying in for the rest of your life, do you think?
Probably.
All right. And how much are your monthly payments, your mortgage payments on that home?
About $1,500.
All right. So $1,500 a month is approximately $18,000 a year, correct?
Yes.
How many more years do you have left on your mortgage?
About 25.
25, which would put you at approximately how old? 65, 70 years of age, correct?
Yes.
Right. Now, you have nothing you say in your retirement. How much would you have in a retirement account in order to generate for you $18,000 a year to pay off your mortgage? Do you have any idea?
No.
Right. Probably about $600,000, because $600,000 at, 4% interest, right around there, because you have to be conservative. So let's say it's even $500,000, is approximately $20,000-$25,000 a year after taxes, because you're going to have to pay taxes when you take money out of a 401k or normal retirement accounts. That will give you the money to pay your mortgage. How much do you owe on your mortgage?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to go grab my mortgage bill, but
That's a key. You have to know these things. I can tell you it's easier to pay off your mortgage than it is for you to save that kind of money to pay off your mortgage. So I would be telling you the best thing you should do right now is divide it in half. Make extra payments towards your mortgage so your mortgage is paid off in full by the time you are 60. And whatever is left, if you qualify for it, I would be putting money in a Roth IRA if I were you.
And Loretta, thanks. Thanks for the call. And on this question of retirement, because you really focus on this and how important it is,
yes.
Part of what your message also is start early, even if it's not very much, even if you're putting aside, $50 a month, because that money will grow at a compound interest over time.
Yeah, so here's what I love about this book is there is a password in this book. The password is EIEIO. That allows you to go to my website, SusieOrman.com. There is no advertising on my website, people, whatsoever. So please don't think this is just a ploy to get you to go there so I make more money on advertisers. But there are no advertisers anywhere on that site, and there never will be. And if you go to where it says Women and Money and you click and you put in that password, EIEIO, and you answer the 20 questions there, I then, via the computer program I've created for you, will be able to tell you what you should do in your particular situations, because sometimes, Dave, it's better to get out of credit card debt than put money in a retirement account. Sometimes you should be paying off the mortgage on your home. Sometimes you shouldn't. So you're all really unique individuals. So take advantage of that. And the password, again, is EIEIO.
Get to more calls in just a moment, but you brought up whether or not there's a commercial connection, and you are sometimes challenged on that question about whether or not you're going to make money on particular things. There's a deal in your book where people can start something through Ameritrade, and you say on your website there's no financial connection to you. But respond to that concern that gee, Susie must be recommending this because she's getting something on the back end.
Yeah. So for the deal with TD Ameritrade that Dave, everybody is talking about, is that I am on this movement called the Save Yourself Movement, and I am trying to change the savings rate in the United States of America. You briefly heard me refer to it that the middle class, in my opinion, is disappearing. And I do believe that. I think the issue on global warming is very minute compared to what's happening to the middle class in the United States of America today. And therefore, to that end, I want every single woman and man alike to have a savings account they can call their own. If you go to saveyourself.com, You put in the code in the back of the book, which is 701. It allows you to open up a Save Yourself account with TD Ameritrade. TD Ameritrade stepped up to the plate. I asked other financial institutions to do this, but this deal is so rich for the consumer, and I'll tell you what it is in a second, that nobody else wanted to do it. There is no financial connection between me whatsoever with TD Ameritrade. I do not make a penny if you open up an account. They do not advertise on my show on CNBC, and even though TD Ameritrade did purchase 4,000 books to give their employees, I do not make one penny of royalty from any book TD Ameritrade has bought or will ever buy in the future, in bulk or on any level. But to that end, all I'm asking you to do is if you deposit at least $50 a month for 12 consecutive months into the Save Yourself account, it will be held in a money market deposit account where there are no fees or commissions whatsoever. You will be paid an interest rate of approximately 4.6%. It is FDIC insured, and in the 13th month, you will get $100. Now, if you do the calculation on that, $50 a month, just 50, I'm not saying put $600 in now, $50 a month over 12 months, that comes out to a 31% return on your money. But I do just want to say this. If I could have struck a deal with TD Ameritrade where they had paid me an endorsement deal of millions of dollars, I would have taken it. And why should people be upset if I am making money, if you are making money as well? It's because I'm a woman, Dave. And it's because I'm a woman.
But isn't also the key, Susie, transparency, to say straight up, here's the deal. You know, I'm this is the deal, and yeah, I get this amount back. Because if you're not transparent, that's where people's eyebrows start inching
upward.
But
I've always been transparent. There's nothing that I shouldn't be transparent about. You know, I do have a deal with Fair Isaac Company, myfico.com, where obviously if you go to their website, you will see I have a FICO kit. Obviously, I make money if you buy that kit. But if you look at what I offer you in that kit, for a few dollars more than three FICO scores, and if you buy an individual FICO score, I do not make a penny. But who else offers a FICO score besides FICO? So I'm not in this just for charity. I am a woman. I feel fine about making money. Ladies, you should be feel fine when I make money as well. But in this deal with TD Ameritrade, it is so rich for the consumer. There is no money for me to be made. But if I could, I would have. Trust me on that one.
Susie Orman, our guest, her book, Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. And back to more of our calls. Let's go to Olga next, who joins us in Oakland. Olga, go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I'm a public interest lawyer, which means I work with poor people, but the main problem is that I'm poor. I owe about $235,000 in student loans from undergrad, grad school, and law school. My husband also owns about $100,000 in student loans. We both work, yet it's just almost impossible that we can even save anything because we spend most of our money, about $1,700 a month, just paying interest on our student loans. And I don't see any way out of it. And it's actually quite frustrating. And I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Can you tell me, have you consolidated your student loans?
We've consolidated both our federal loans.
At what interest rate?
I have a private loan. Oh, so they're both about at 4.85% because we had loans in the 90s.
Yes.
When the interest rates were much higher. So we have 4.85, I guess, on about $210,000. And then I have a private loan that's about $125,000 that just, you know.
8 or 9%.
Yes.
Yes. See, here I'm. Listen, I get what you're saying, and I wish I had a magic wand that I could help you here. The only thing that I can do, and I have been doing, and I don't know if you saw it on C-SPAN, is I have been testifying in front of Senate with Senator Kennedy and other senators for us to really figure out what can we do about this horrific predicament that the students are in who have student loans of your nature. 400,000 kids that should be going to school in the United States of America aren't going to school because they can't afford it. The problem is that parents are trying to help you out. They're taking the equity out of their homes, especially the mothers, loans from their 401k plans. That's going down. The student loans are going down. It is a horrific, horrific thing that's happening in the United States.
So, but for someone like Olga, who has that sort of student loan debt burden, what to do?
Now, I'm going to tell you something that you're not going to like what I'm about to say, but it is true. I love the area that you're working in, but you just said you don't make any money doing it. That makes you feel poor. That makes you feel like you can't breathe. Is there any possibility that you could take this incredible degree that you got, this incredible fact that you are a lawyer, and for a smaller period of time, it doesn't have to be the rest of your life, can you go and get a job somewhere that pays you the income needed to get rid of these student loans, and then when you feel that you yourself are on a solid financial footing, then go back and be more charitable in nature and do that which you love? Is there any possibility that you can do that?
Well, there's definitely always the possibility, but it's unfortunately not as easy as everyone thinks, you know, partly for my own choices and how I feel about living my life and, you know, wanting to do the work and the money that I spent on my education, you know, to do what I want to do. So it's definitely a constant struggle between making the choices that I want and then having my money, you know, my debt making choices for me. And I kind of struggle with that all the time.
Can I ask you one quick question? If you were, you're a mother right now, and your daughter was in this exact situation that you're in, and you had no money to help her, what would you tell her to do?
Well, what my parents always tell me to do, because they have no money to help me, which is go get a job at a firm.
Thank you.
Holka, right. Thanks. Thanks for the call. You feel for someone like that who is doing important work and yet is shouldering this enormous debt. And it really comes down to, it sounds like you're saying, you got to make choices.
Yeah, and I so wish that we lived in a world where the government, the administration, honored somebody like Olga, and that people who do such essential work like that got paid more money. But God forbid we should, and you know, NPR, PBS is the exact same thing. We should honor NPR. We should honor PBS and the stations and the programming, really, that are brought to the public. But it's a nonprofit. The people who work for these places get paid nothing. Why is it that we don't value those people, our teachers? Why don't we value those people in life that are really helping people who can't help themselves, bringing things to people that really they should see? But no, it's not that way, and that's a big struggle that we all have to deal with.
And some of those professions, the so-called helping professions, are often ones where there is a high percentage of women working
in those jobs. It's very sad.
To Lisa next, who joins us on the Sirius Satellite Network this morning from San Antonio, Texas. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, Susie. My question is about buying a home. We are in the process of actually going to close on a home next week, and I'm just wondering what percentage of your income should you spend on your home, or if that old rule of no more than 2 years combined income is what you should spend on a home. Our home is near that. It's going to be about $10,000 more than our total 2 years income, but we just want it to be in a decent neighborhood. My daughter already goes to school there, and we're renting there, and
here's
kind of
what
feel
I,
like...
But Liz, here's what I'd like to say to you. I still have time and all on the show here, is that this. It's not how much do you spend on a home, because you can buy a home and put no money down. You can buy a home and put 20, 30, 40% down. It's not the price of the home. It's how much is the home going to cost you to keep, not just in your mortgage payments, but in your insurance, in your property taxes, and your maintenance. So I would hope that you would do something called Playhouse. I would like you to add up what it will cost you for your mortgage, for your property taxes, for your insurance, for your maintenance, for your PMI, if you're not putting at least 20% down, whatever it may be. And I want you then to compare that figure to what it costs you to live right now. You might find that it's $3,000 a month to do that in your new home. The place that you're living right now maybe only cost you $1,800 a month. Do you really have the extra $1,200 a month in that case to really easily be able to meet all of your payments? That is what it will be determined upon. Do you understand? That is the bottom line. If you know you have that money, go ahead and do it. If you don't, you better be thinking twice.
Lisa, thanks for the call. John joins us next from Larkspur. John, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Susie. Great show.
Thank you.
I'm more philosophical in the question than financial, but my parents and my grandparents never would even think of a credit card, let alone paying those exorbitant interest rates. I'm beginning to wonder if there's something genetic. I got pretty well into real estate. I borrowed for all of it. I got it all paid off, and I noted my parents died free and clear, as did their parents. And I'm wondering what happened in my generation that all of a sudden you got these moonshots. You just live in another world.
And how old are you right now?
I'm in my late 70s.
All right, because there you go.
I'm a credit card interest in my life. When I first saw those rates, my hair went straight up.
But see, what you have to remember is for your parents and your grandparents, most likely credit cards did not even exist. It wasn't even an option. And over the years, and we're experiencing this right now with the mortgages in the subprime areas that a lot of people have gotten in trouble with. For this economy to continue on the way that it was going years ago, they realized, hey, if we lend people money on credit cards and we allow them to buy things that they can't afford, it stimulates the entire economy. Everybody makes more money, meaning the creditors, the retailers, the people who need to make more money. And they didn't really care about the consumer, so to speak. I know there are many people that think debt is the key to building your own wealth. I will forever be one, I'm sorry to say, that debt is bondage. I think one should build it. I think there is good debt. I like mortgage debt. How do you buy a house today without it in most cases? But as far as credit cards and things go, shame on all of us that we allow credit card companies to go onto college campuses and seduce our children for a Frisbee, for a T-shirt. We're mortgaging our children's future for them to allow the campuses that we're paying for our kids to go to have credit card companies on it. Shame on this administration, shame on the college campuses, shame on what's happened.
John, thanks for the call. And you also say in your book, shame on parents for not talking to their kids. I mean, we all think if we're parents that we ought to be responsible and talk to our children about sex and drugs or whatever else we talk to them about. But you make the point that we don't talk enough about how to use their money and the problems of credit cards in particular.
But Dave, how does somebody talk about something that they don't know about? How do you, I mean, truthfully, it's easy for mommy and daddy to talk to their kids about sex. Mommy and daddy But you know what I mean? It seems like it's a natural thing because mommy and daddy hopefully have a healthy relationship that way. And it's just a natural function of why they even have a child, so to speak. Money. We don't talk about money. How's mommy going to talk to their kids about money when mommy can't even have a healthy conversation with herself and possibly her spouse or life partner about her money? You can't just talk to your kids. You can't tell your kids what to do. You have to show your kids who they should be.
And to Bob, who joins us next in Arinda. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have a 19-year-old daughter, and we opened up a Roth IRA for her a number of years ago, but she was earning money playing piano for churches and things like that. What can we do to try and get her as much money as possible into for her retirement?
You know, time is the most important ingredient in any financial recipe. You need to show her. Rather than get it for her and do it for her, you need to show her the value that time and her own efforts will produce. Tell her the following. If she starts putting just $100 a month away every month into that Roth IRA, and she put it in a good no-loan mutual fund, such as the Vanguard Stock Market Index Fund, Total Stock Market Index Fund, or whatever it may be, tell her this. If she did that every single month for until she was, let's say, 60 years of age, for 40 years, tell her she would have, with normal market returns, approximately $1 million. But then tell her the following. But honey, I know you're not going to possibly want to do that. You think you're young. You think, what difference can $100 a month make? That's only $1,200 a year. Maybe you want to wait till you're 29 to start. That's a difference of $12,000. Tell her if she doesn't start it until she's 29, she'll have only $300,000 when she is 60. Those 10 years cost her $700,000. When you show her that, you now have given her the incentive to want to save today. That's how you get her to be a woman who owns the power to control her destiny.
I understand that. My daughter is very well aware of the value of retirement money and contributing to it. But as an example, with a Roth, right now she's in school, so she's not earning any money.
So
she's not allowed to put money away in
the Roth. No, so what she should do is get herself a side job. She can earn a little money. There's nothing wrong with her babysitting, doing something, and then putting up to 100% of what she earns into a Roth, up to a maximum, obviously, of $4,000. But she should be working now to earn money to get it into a Roth IRA, even though she is going to school.
Bob, thanks for the call. Yep, thank you. Let's squeeze in one more call if we can. Shauna, you're next in Oakland. I'm afraid we just have a moment, so a brief question if you would, please.
Okay, I'll try and make it brief. I'm single. I make a good living. I just started as an older woman in my 30s, attending college. I don't have a home, but I have a loan, and I don't owe any money on my credit cards, and I'm concerned about the loan and possibly getting a house and just how to manage and save long-term.
Here's the, again, because we only have a few seconds left, and again, I don't mean to be pushing the book here. That's not what I like to do on interviews. You can go to the library and take out the book, Women and Money. Read that book. Follow the Save Yourself plan. Start the Save Yourself at Save Yourself account. Do what I ask you to do in the book, and all of this will come together for you. Again, you can go to my website, SusieOrman.com, put in that password, EIEIO, and it will tell you exactly what to do in your situation. I've given it all to you for free here right now, so please go ahead and do that.
Shauna, thanks for the call. Sorry we didn't have more time. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, if you're Googling Susie Orman, you need to spell it S-U-Z-E, S-U-Z-E, Orman, O-R-M-A-N, if you're trying to find out more about that. We've reached the end of our hour. Give just your best 30 seconds worth of advice, Susie Orman.
If all of us, men and women alike, I hope we come together with money. Men, I hope you venture into this book so again that you know the women in your life, what they're going through emotionally speaking. Your wife, your mother, your daughter, your sister. We just heard a male caller call in to ask, how can he get his daughter to do something? The best thing you can do for your daughter is to understand that she will become a woman and she will start to feel guilty about the money she makes and she will tend to give it all away. We need to create new roadmaps to navigate this new territory that we have created. Women and men alike, I hope you all come together as one with your money.
Susie Orman, our guest this past hour. Again, her new book is called Women and Money, Owning the Power to Control Your Destiny. Susie Orman, thanks for being with us this morning.
Anytime.
Pleasure to have you here. Forum is produced by Robin Giannatasio-Mall, Hermione G., and Kevin Guillory. Our engineer this hour, Danny Bringer, and the executive producer of Forum is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.